This is the Hoosier Ag Today Friday podcast, the day after the 4th of July. It's the 5th. Good morning. I'm Andy Eubank, joined on the podcast by Eric Pfeiffer and Sabrina Halverson with the news, and Hath Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin. He says more rain in the forecast, but not as much today as yesterday. The Hat Podcast is brought to you by First Farmers Bank and Trust. Experience banking built on heart, grit, and agriculture. FFBT.com to learn more and stop by your local branch. Also coming up in the news, a look at the current corn and soybean crops around Indiana and a new tool for SCN management. A look at the corn, soybean, and wheat balance sheets. Analyst Carl Setzer is here on the Hoosier Ag Today Friday podcast.
At First Farmers Bank and Trust, agriculture has been a cornerstone of our business for more than 135 years. Our personal relationships within the ag community run deep for multiple generations. If you're looking for a financial partner that knows, understands, and supports agriculture, we want to hear from you. Let's grow success together. Visit us online at ffbt.com or visit any of our branches to meet an ag expert in your area. First Farmers Bank and Trust. Member FDIC. Equal opportunity lender.
Hey, this is Brian Schrader.
Carl Jorn.
And Ben Jacob.
And we're the hosts of the Indiana Pioneer Agronomy Podcast. Each episode, we cover up-to-date field and crop conditions for growers throughout the state of Indiana. Talk to guests about the latest pests, diseases, agronomic technologies, and much more. You can find new episodes weekly on your preferred podcast platform.
Soybeans green to the eye by the 4th of July and maybe a breakthrough on SCN. I'm Eric Pfeiffer. This is Hoosier Ag Today. Knee high by the 4th of July. That's what Grandpa always hoped for when watching that corn grow. Until we start growing more of that short stature corn that may not get much taller than knee high, I think we've all adjusted our expectations from Grandpa's day. Purdue's Dan Corn Quinn says on the latest Purdue Crop Chat podcast that most of us would prefer over your head by the 4th of July, but that doesn't quite have the same ring to it, does it? Soybean Sean Castile has been saying for several years, though, now that your beans should be green to the eye by the 4th of July. Now that's got a ring to it. He says as farmers plant soybeans earlier, the accumulated heat units and critical night length that we get before photoperiod pushes us into flowering, taking us from an 18 to 20 trifoliate noted plant to upwards of a 24 noted plant.
Those are just great opportunities for more pod production. Usually that earlier planted crop is more compact, and it is a compact plant this year. So, we talked about we're ahead in terms of stand establishment, emergence, and heat unit accumulation. But when I've been looking at these plants, their internal elongation hasn't been extreme. They've been very tight early on, and what I mean by that, the early ones, quarter, half inch on the lower ones. But usually by nodes 6, 7, 8, 9, we're really stretching out, and they're still, I'd say, a good just 2 inches instead of 3 or 4 inch internodes. And that just gives me an indication, again, okay, we've got a crop that's noting well, but it's not growing really tall, so it's going to be a compact plant. Mm-hmm. It is flowering, so as long as we can get that thing closed, harvest that sunlight, that green to the eye by the 4th of July, so we're maximizing sunlight interception, solar radiation, all that things that we want to do to create the factory to transition to flowers and pods. That's what it's about.
Hear much more from Castile and Quinn in the Purdue Crop Chat on your favorite podcast platform, or just visit HoosierAgToday.com. A new development for soybeans could change the management of the crop's biggest pest. Here's Sabrina Halverson.
For the last several decades, growers have fought soybean cyst nematode, or SCN, with very few tools in the toolbox. Now, BASF Agricultural Solutions is changing that with Nemisphere, nematode-resistant trait. BASF trait development manager Michael McCarville says it's the most groundbreaking innovation in SCN management in more than 60 years.
Soybean cyst nematode is the number one yield-reducing pathogen in the United States. It's been that way for the last 50 years. And management has been rather stagnant for the last 2 to 3 decades, with most management relying on native resistance traits. So if you look at what's available to the farmer today, 97% of what he grows is going to be SCN resistant. And that primarily comes from two sources, either PI8788 or pKing. And with all great things in agriculture, pests adapt to good management tools. So BASF is looking at bringing the first transgenic trait to market, Nemisphere, to help improve soybean cyst nematode management for U.S. farmers.
McCarville says the effectiveness of native SCN traits is declining significantly. To combat this problem, Nemisphere produces a protein that is ingested by nematodes. It interferes with nutrient uptake in their intestines, which leads to the nematode's death.
BT or cry proteins, like the farmer knows for insect management in corn, we're bringing that technology to soybean to manage soybean cyst nematode. This will be the first time in agriculture that we've used a BT or cry protein for nematode management.
The technology is currently going through the registration process. McCarville expects growers to be able to plant the Nemisphere variety in the 2028 season. I'm Sabrina Halverson.
And I'm Eric Pfeiffer, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.
Every farming operation has a story with a past, present, and future. Farm Credit Mid-America wants to get to know your farm story because we're a lending cooperative owned by farmers. And that's why we offer a range of loans and services designed to help farmers grow and prosper. Because we know why no one knows a farmer like a farmer does. Learn more about Farm Credit Mid-America and some of our farmers' stories at fcma.com. Loan subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply. Farm Credit Mid-America is an equal opportunity lender.
Farmers and agriculture dealers, now is the time to inspect your combines for holes and wear in your threshing, feeder, and grain tank sections. Instead of costly replacements, try combine wear parts from Eile Fabrications, made with the best steel, such as Hardox or Strengths wear plate. Eile's steel wear part liners are easy to install and built to OEM specs to ensure a snug and seamless fit at a cost less than OEM replacement parts. Visit IHLEFabrications.com and elevate your harvest this season.
If you would like to begin or expand a conservation practice on your farm operation and earn some revenue as well, then you might want to enroll in the Soil and Water Outcomes Fund. Tyler Rausch is Indiana's field program representative for the Soil and Water Outcomes Fund, and he says it improves the long-term resiliency of your farm operation.
We're working with growers to implement new conservation practices such as tillage reduction, cover crop implementation, or extended crop rotation. We're not only looking at the soil health benefits, but the farm benefits from reducing fertilizer rates and then the carbon sequestration process that we are implementing there from reducing the tillage, which is reducing the amount of diesel fuel that is burnt and then the carbon that is being sequestered in the soil.
Hear more about the Soil and Water Outcomes Fund in our next podcast. Check out their website, TheOutcomesFund.com.
I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's Indiana Farm Forecast. Another drippy day in parts of the Hoosier State, but you know what? Moisture today does not look to have near the coverage that we saw yesterday. And to be honest with you, coverage yesterday focused more on central and southern Indiana than up north. I'm afraid that we get through this 2 to 2.5 day stretch of moisture, and there's going to be some folks that are contacting me in the northern half to northern third that say, hey, where's the rain? You were talking rain, and we didn't get much of anything. And I get that, all right? It's just the way the system is coming together. But as we move through your Friday, we see lingering showers, more so, again, in central and southern Indiana than up north. 50 to 60% coverage, I think, is the most we can see today. An additional few hundredths to maybe half an inch, depending on where you are at today. The big activity, the thunderstorm activity, seems to want to be lifting a little bit farther north up into Michigan. We clear out everywhere as we go through the overnight tonight, and your Saturday honestly looks fantastic. Slightly cooler temperatures, not cold, but cooler, and humidity values that drop significantly. I can't wait for that. The last couple of days have been a little bit uncomfortable. As we move forward, we see a dry Sunday as well. Humidity values and temperatures starting to rise a little bit, and then we're back to unsettled weather for the start of next week. I don't think we see much coming in here on Monday now. I'll give you a mostly dry Monday. Hit and miss scattered showers, heat-based action overnight to Monday night through Tuesday morning. The balance of Tuesday, just muggy and humid with clouds and sunshine. And then we flip a switch. We start to go drier Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I think in that Wednesday afternoon, early Thursday time frame, I'd be remiss if I didn't allow for some pop-up stuff in the heat, but I just don't think it's going to be exceptionally well organized. And once we get to Friday, I'm looking at a completely dry scenario here. Dry air, but also humid air, and we're seeing the heat build from the western United States. I really feel that as we go through Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, temperatures are going to start to climb, humidity values climb just in time for the old county fair season to ramp up over a large part of the state. What would it be with a county fair without heat and humidity, right? But that's what we're looking at here. I think we're shifting into that drier, hotter phase for the second half of the month of July. So we'll just kind of see whether that continues to come together. In my mind, the only thing that can upset that apple cart a little bit is additional tropical moisture. The remains of Beryl, I think, are going to be playing into the forecast here this upcoming week, at least a little bit. And if we have several others that try and come together and get into the Gulf of Mexico area, that could throw a monkey wrench into any hot, dry finish to July. Probably still stays hot, but what does that tropical moisture do? Honestly, that's what I'm looking at as we move through the next few weeks, seeing what the tropics really want to throw our direction. That's the way things are stacking up. Have a great rest of your weekend. Be safe. I'm meteorologist Ryan Martin.
An Independence Day off for the markets. Back to trade on Friday. This is Hoosier Ag Today. I'm Andy Eubank with the Thursday Farm Market Review, but nothing to report as the markets were all closed. Back with a regular daytime session on Friday. I did check in for some comments with Carl Setzer. He's with Consus Ag Consulting. Carl, happy 4th of July. And since the USDA stocks and acreage reports and the three full sessions that followed, along with forecasts, crop conditions, demand, what do we know about, taking them one at a time, the corn, soybean, and wheat markets? Let's start with corn, which really got hardest hit by the end of June reports on Friday.
It really did. And when we, you know, we've had some time to sit and reevaluate and really look at the corn balance sheets. And that's the question now, Andy, is what does that corn data mean for the balance sheets? Now, stocks up 22% on the year. We know that. That's kind of, we went right past that into this acreage number where, you know, the USDA coming out 91.5 million planted acres, 83.4 million on the harvested side. And let's work that into balance sheets. And if we use the current USDA yield at 181 bushels per acre, we come up with this 15.09 billion bushel U.S. corn crop. Demand from the USDA, 14.8 billion. So, you know, we see this. We're going to be well above our demand, even with the old acreage, I will say, you know, that the USDA had at 90 million, we were still at a 14.86. So we were holding things together. With these added acres, it allows yield to drop all the way back to 177 bushels per acre and still satisfy demand. Looking forward, though, the number we keep going back to on corn is that when this data was collected, we still had 3.36 million acres of corn left to plant. Trade really starting to look forward to this August FSA acreage numbers to see if we can get a little better clarification on how many acres really did go in.
And let's shift over to soybeans. The market itself enjoyed some positive movement throughout the week following the report. What do you see overall? And I guess taking a look at that balance sheet.
Yeah, when we spin that around and look at soybean, the soybean balance sheet, you know, trade looking at the new number that came out, 86.1 million acres planted to soybeans. If we trim that back to 85 million on the harvested and still use this 52 bushel per acre, it comes up with a 4.42 billion bushel crop. Demand, current demand, 4.36 billion bushels. So we have about 90 million bushels to play with here. So we're sitting okay. Here's the thing. If we take one bushel per acre off that yield, all of a sudden it's not okay. And if we take two off, we're right back to a rationing position. And when we look at the soybean acres, it causes even more confusion because at the end of the data collection, we still had 12.8 million soybean acres to plant, and farmers in the United States will not mud in soybeans, especially when Prevent Plant Insurance is 50 cents more attractive than the current market value on soybeans. So all of a sudden, trade woke up a little bit in that soy complex after that USDA report. And then on Wednesday, we got news that China and Indonesia were starting to get into a bit of a trade war, may bring the United States a little more soy oil demand. And that just helped that soy complex even a little bit more to work to the upside.
Wheat futures have been trending lower, a minor bump one day during the course of this week. But overall, it's been down and down for a while.
Yeah, and we got some confusing news coming out of Russia on their wheat crop this week. Of course, we had the big frost issue in Russia and some damage there. And then China, some drought conditions. And then as the week progressed, China started to pick up rains, put some pressure on the wheat complex. But the big one came out on Wednesday, when Sovicon, the big analytical group in Russia, came out and bumped their wheat production up 3.4 million metric tons, putting it at 84.1 million after they'd been saying how bad the crop was. So all of a sudden, we got this reversal in attitude. Didn't really cause heavy selling pressure in wheat. But boy, when we look at the harvest pressure coming in the United States and even thoughts that we may not see big losses in the global crop, it was enough to put pressure on our wheat complex.
Thoughts from Carl Setzer, Consus Ag Consulting. Carl's number is 989-506-1587. I'm Andy Eubank. This is Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's most listened to farm network.